out shortly here, and H minus 10 seconds, the countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Cut, Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society. And it is Saturday, the 14th of January in the glorious future year of 2023. And the word that seems to be on everyone's lips right at the moment is Lutzeroth. Now, what the hell is a Lutzeroth, anyway? Well, it's the name of a German town, or was the name of a German town. And the newspapers continue to describe it as an abandoned town, which would imply that the people who lived there just got up and walked away, which is far from being the case. They were bought out. They were told that they had to leave. They were told that they had to leave because their village was going to be demolished and the dirt underneath it scraped away because deeper underneath the dirt was a seam of lignite. Now, what is lignite? We've mentioned it here on the program before. It's one of the dirtiest of fossil fuels. It's also one with a very poor fuel value. In other words, the amount of heat you get out of burning a ton or out of burning a cubic meter isn't very large, because lignite contains a whole lot of mineral ash and a whole lot of water, non-combustible substances. So in general, lignite is never transported anywhere. It is, instead, burned in mine-mouth power plants. There's one not far from me, as a matter of fact. It's called Big Brown. Interestingly, not because of brown smoke or brown coal, which is more or less a synonym for lignite, but because that's the name of a creek that flows in the area. But there are people who are just outraged, absolutely outraged by this. And you know, it's hard for me to understand why. This is what the German people have been asking for. This is what the German people have been demanding for 40 years now. This is what they say they want, but when they get it, they don't like it. Isn't that strange? You know, I'm always bothered by this. Wolf Haefele, who is a German who started out in the nuclear field and became very much interested in energy questions. Wolf Haefele, back in the 1981, which is a long time ago now, it's more than 40 years ago, he said, "If we continue with the present crippling of nuclear power, we shall be driven very quickly into the domain of low-grade fossil fuels." I think none of us has really understood what it will mean for whole regions to be destroyed or removed. We have had a little taste of it at Jülich, where there was a nuclear research center, actually, where artificial mountains are being built by overburdens. The largest pit in the world is being created for the sake of producing lignite, brown coal, And what is at stake there is a matter of less than 1 terawatt year over 20 years. And that isn't very much. He means, of course, very much in the context of world energy needs, not in the context of an individual human life. But that isn't very much in the context of world energy needs. But again, this is what the German people have been asking for, demanding, voting for 40 years. I can show you a campaign ad, a political ad from about 1980. It mentions the year 1980 in it, so it's, you know, a year earlier or later than that, is all I can really say. A German political ad from the 1980s saying, "We want coal, not nuclear." This is specifically in Nordrhein-Westfalen, the state of North Rhine-Westphalia, which is where Lützerath is located. Yes! And what is the company that is digging this enormous pit? It is the Rhenish-Westphalisches Elektrizitätswerk, the Rhine-Westphalia Electricity Works. You know, RWE, as it's known, at one time was very big in nuclear energy, but not anymore. Not anymore because, beginning about 1980, the NRW government became extremely hostile to nuclear energy. You know, the Kalkar Fast Breeder Reactor, SNR 300, was built in Nordrhein-Westfalen because that was an industrial heart of West Germany, and the government, state government there had invited it. And also it was close to the borders with the Benelux countries, which were partners in the project. But what happened? The NRW government never allowed the reactor to operate. They kept coming up with more and more ludicrous demands it had to meet until it was finally shut down. It was never opened. The project was abandoned because the reactor had been finished. Everything had been finished and ready to operate for a decade, and they wouldn't allow it to start up. They did nearly the same thing with THTR 300, the prototype high-temperature reactor at Hamm-Wentrop. It was, after a decade of delays, finally allowed to operate, but shut down after only about a year, partly because the state government banned the manufacture of the fuel. Now, the other thing that happened was THTR 300, the pebble bed high-temperature reactor, had some early problems with cracked fuel balls and jamming of the airlock that allows the fuel out at the bottom and various other things, which probably could have been remedied, but, you know, the state government banned the manufacture of the fuel. They said, nope, you're not allowed to do that anymore. And so that project was also abandoned when it probably could have been pursued to great advantage to the world. And even, believe it or not, to the coal producers of Nordrhein-Westfalen, yes. Yes, friends, because one of the main purposes of the high-temperature reactor project, other than producing a reactor so inherently safe that it could be located downtown in a German city without any concern as to the health and safety of the populace, the other main purpose was to produce heat at a high enough temperature that it could be used to convert lignite into gaseous and liquid fuels that could be transported and could be sold and could be exported even. In other words, to upgrade and increase the value of lignite. But no. As I say, there was lots of political advertising saying, "We want coal, not nuclear. Nuclear destroys jobs." You know anything about coal mining jobs? They're awful, awful jobs. They're dangerous and they're dirty. Coal kills people in the producing of it and in the using of it and even in the transporting of it because the quantities that have to be transported are so insanely large. I was reading the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday, as I sometimes do, or glancing through it, really, that's all I can stand. And there was a big puff piece about Chesapeake Energy, one of the big shale gas producers here in the United States. And there was a little something along the lines of, policymakers have realized that there's a place for hydrocarbons in energy policy after all, so we really see the company as having a great future, despite, you know, demands for decarbonization and so on. And that's what it looks like all around the world. You know, there's a lot of controversy right now about the fact that the next conference of parties to the Paris Climate Accords and Kyoto Protocol on greenhouse gas emissions is to be headed by none other than the person who's the head of ADNOC, the Abu Dhabi National Oil Company. Now, are you going to say that it's a conflict of interest? That somebody whose whole business is selling oil should be in charge of a conference that is at least nominally about things like decarbonizing the world energy supply and reducing the environmental impact of world energy production? You know, that's where we are at now, yeah? That's where we are at. Because the truth is, anybody who thought that all of this was about getting off of fossil fuels hasn't been paying attention. You know, you think about who are the patron saints of the green movement, and of course there's Fuller, not Buckminster, but the National Coal Board economist who wrote Small is Beautiful. Maybe he really believed what he said about how radioactivity was far, far worse than any of the environmental destruction caused by mining and burning coal. Maybe he honestly believed that, but if he did, there certainly was no background of scientific fact to that belief. Amory Lovins, everybody's favorite patron saint, everybody's favorite guru, with his soft energy paths, talking about how we can move away from these soul-crushing centralized technologies that destroy the spark of creativity in the human spirit, or whatever he's talking about. Yeah, well, what was his solution exactly? You know, he was the guy who published in Physics Review that piece claiming 9 billion fatal lung cancers from a pound of plutonium. 20 billion lung cancers from a kilogram of plutonium. A fatal lung cancer for every 0.05 nanogram of plutonium released into the environment. Well, I hate to tell you, friends, literally tons of the stuff were released directly into the atmosphere and, to some extent, the waters of the Earth in the course of testing of thermonuclear weapons above ground from the 1940s all the way into the 1980s. Now, do you have... Everybody on Earth, by his calculation, ought to have hundreds of fatal lung cancers by now at a minimum. Do you have hundreds or thousands of fatal lung cancers? Do you right now? Can you feel them? Can you feel them? Yeah. I personally think Amory Lovins is full of shit. And I will tell him so to his face if I ever see him. And I think that the people who published that article in Physics Review did so without the least consideration, without even bothering to mention it to anyone with any scientific knowledge of the question. Because, believe it or not, the question of so-called hot particles, the effect of the inhalation of radioactive dust into the lungs, had been studied and was actively being studied, and the conclusions have been that it's not really nearly as bad as all that. In fact, for non-smokers, it's mostly not a concern. I know someone whose father was involved in one of these studies, a veterinarian, doing animal studies, and he said that the biggest problem they had was they had to surgically implant the plutonium into the lungs of the experimental animals they were using, because if they tried to blow dust up their noses, they just blew it back out. The healthy lung and respiratory tract is remarkably good at that, so if you don't have miner's silicosis and you're not a smoker, you're not likely to develop fatal lung cancer from inhaling radioactive dusts. And if you do have minor silicosis, or you are a heavy smoker, you're likely to develop fatal lung cancer anyway. And anybody who had the least knowledge of oncology could have told the editors of Physics Review that. But that was, you know, that article made Amory Lovins' reputation, despite being nothing more than a smear piece claiming that the development of the closed nuclear fuel cycle would inevitably kill everyone. And what was his solution? What was his solution? What did he spend 40 years advocating for? His beautiful small-scale solution that would democratize access to energy. Oh, sure, he talked a lot about solar collectors on roofs and that kind of thing. But his major solution was to put a coal-fired power plant literally in your backyard. So-called block heating and power plants. They call them Blockheizkraftwerke in German. They're still a very popular idea. A fluidized bed coal combustor, because of course fluidized bed combustion makes everything that much cleaner. Fluidized bed coal combustor on a size to serve maybe 4 city blocks. And so there would be a coal-burning power station everywhere you looked. In every neighborhood, in every city, in every town and village. Now, quite aside from the problem that you're then releasing the products of combustion right into your environment, right where you live, you know, is everybody going to put up 200-meter-tall chimneys to diffuse those pollutants, or are they going to put up shorter chimneys and those pollutants just get released right where they are? Can you imagine the trouble caused by having, what, trains? Trucks? Rolling up every day or even every week to deliver tons of coal to your local coal power plant? The idea is baffling. Even if you claim, oh, no, we're going to pulverize the coal remotely, and then we're going to make it into coal slurry, and then we're going to pump that coal slurry through mains, like gas or water. We're going to pump that, despite the fact that it's very abrasive, we're going to pump that right to the little coal-fired power plant in your backyard. Well, that doesn't make any sense either. And you know why it doesn't make any sense? Because it takes a lot of heat to evaporate water. Drying out the coal before burning it would mean that you had to use significantly more coal. You can't see that I'm scrunching my eyes together. But, you know, this is what the German people have been demanding. This is what they have been voting for. This is what they have been throwing rocks at police for 40 years and more. The fact that they're now throwing rocks at police because they don't like what they asked for by name baffles me. It baffles me. What can be going on in this society? That the people get what they have demanded by name and they suddenly realize they don't like it. Well, golly! You couldn't have figured that out sometime in the past 40 years. Because, and there'll be people say, well, no, we don't need coal, we can do it all with wind and solar. That was always an obvious lie. Yeah, you've put up PV panels all over Germany, and on a really good day in the middle of summer, they may generate a substantial fraction of the electricity the country uses, which is, by the way, still only 20% or so of the total energy that the country uses. Yeah. Germany had, the sunniest spot in Germany, as I've told you before, has about 1,800 hours of sunlight a year. And much of that comes in the summer when the demand for energy is less than it is in the winter. Similarly with wind, you've put up wind machines all over everywhere, and people are getting sick of them. And, you know, under very favorable conditions, they produce a substantial amount of the country's electricity. But on an average year-round, they don't produce anything like that. And on an average year-round, electricity is only a modest part of the country's total energy consumption. It was never very much of a secret. It was never really well hidden, right, that these panels and these wind machines were anything, you know, they've never been anything but window dressing. And that has never been a secret. Anyway, I'm not going to talk any more about that, partly because it makes me mad and depressed, and partly because it's pointless. What's happening now is happening, and although the people may be upset now that they're getting what that they said that they wanted very explicitly, they're going to keep getting it, whether they're upset or not. You know, the industrial inertia is there. If they wanted to go back to nuclear power, it would take them a long time. And they don't show any sign that they want that. They just don't want this. I don't think they know what they want. I'm not certain that they do want anything, but if they do want something, they certainly haven't made up their minds as to what it is. You know, as I've said before, there are people who get on their high horses about behind-the-meter demand response and completely ignore the costs of demand response. Essentially, wind and solar-based energy system is very expensive. Only a wealthy country can afford it. But the costs of using energy that comes intermittently and unpredictably are so high that the country rapidly becomes not wealthy enough to afford that. Because with demand response, you're shutting down entire industries. Do you realize if you have to shut down the power to an aluminum smelter, for example, without scheduling, you lose a bunch of pots. That's expensive. You then have to reheat, right? You've got to burn gas for 72 hours to remelt the pot contents when you're able to start up again. Yeah, that's really energy efficient, right? Yeah, robbing Peter to pay Paul. And as it turns out, every time you rob Peter to pay Paul, some of the money falls on the ground. And so pretty soon, neither Peter nor Paul has a nickel to his name. But that's what the people of Germany voted for. That's what the people of Germany demanded. That's what the people of Germany said that they wanted. The fact that they don't seem to know that was what they were voting for and demanding is completely beyond my comprehension. But there you go. So I wanted to, you know, I want to talk about, again, I want to go back to talking about the lunar settlement and some of the principles that we have to observe. Now, one of the things about the lunar settlement is that, well, I'll give you an example. My mother's incinerator. For those of you who aren't in the U.S., you may be unfamiliar with a garbage disposal. It's a thing that sits in the bottom of the kitchen sink, and it grinds up kitchen waste into basically fine particles that are then flushed down the drain by water, end up in the sewage treatment plant. And since kitchen waste is organic mostly, this is not a bad compromise. It's begun to leak through the motor housing, which is particularly concerning. And it turns out the reason for this is essentially that after a while, the friction and the caustic nature of some of the substances which are in there cause the casing around the grinder to begin to break down, and water gets past the seals and into the motor compartment, which is fun. And this could be prevented fairly easily. You know, she's had this thing for not 5 years, I don't think. It came with a 2-year guarantee. By making the material 50% thicker, possibly by making it out of stainless steel, but by making the material 50% thicker, they could probably have made the thing last 50 years. But they don't do that. Why don't they do that? Well, some people say, well, if you do that, then people won't need to buy another one, and there's your market gone, which I say is ridiculous. There are billions of people in the world who don't even yet have home connection to a sewer system. The market out there is enormous. You don't have to make a market for replacement machines by making your machines break down, for Christ's sake. There are plenty of people in the world who want to buy a machine because they never had one. It's very stupid and short-sighted thinking. But it's the kind of stupid and short-sighted thinking that we won't be able to afford in the lunar settlement. Everything will have to be built heavier. Yes, if it has to be brought from Earth, that makes it very, very expensive. But it's worth it to not have it break down. It's worth it to not be spending as much time in maintenance, because I'll tell you a little secret. The single most precious quantity is not going to be hydrogen, and it's not going to be carbon, it's not going to be nitrogen. It's going to be human labor and human effort. The time and effort people have to put into fixing things. If they have to fix things, it means that they're not modifying things to work better under lunar conditions, and it means that they're not building new things. And the building new things and the modifying things are what the people are there for in a instrumental sense. Now, the fundamental reason why people are in the lunar settlement is, as I've said many times, to live there, to have another population center of humanity separate from the ones on Earth, and eventually we'll have many, many, in the form of L5 colonies, planetary colonies perhaps, asteroid mining colonies, what have you. Right. Many, many centers of human beings, of Earth living things. It's diversification. It's hope for the future, as I've said ever so many times. But in instrumental sense, the thing that the people should be occupying their time with is building new things and modifying existing things. And they'll get considerable amount of help from teleoperation from people on Earth, and also simply from everything from having somebody on Earth draw up a plan, manufacture a part, test it, and then send the plans up, to live telephone conversations with people on Earth giving advice. And that's one reason we do this at Luna, one light second away, and not at Mars, 15 light minutes away. Anyway, so that's sort of the concept of the whole thing. But there's a wide variety of... Now, what is the... This is the... You know, so the ecologists have something called the law of the minimum, which is that the factor that limits absolutely. If you don't have enough water, for example, it doesn't matter how much of any other nutrient you have, your plants won't grow, and so on. And so in the lunar settlement, the law of the minimum probably applies most strongly to human labor. Now, what's the next thing? I was talking about energy before. We actually have a conundrum, because yes, there's a lot of energy, but no, we can't use it foolishly. Jeff Grayson at the New Worlds Conference several years ago brought this point out very, very clearly. I thought it was brilliantly done. That, for example, photovoltaic panels cost a lot of energy to manufacture, which means that if we're making PV panels to expand our energy output, to expand our manufacturing, most of the expansion of that manufacturing has to be plowed back into the PV panels, which is bad. It's also a reason why I'm not an advocate of PV. But he says, for this reason, we want to use less refined metal, right? We want to use less of materials and manufacturing processes that require a lot of energy, and we want to use more raw dirt where we can. Cast basalt is the next best thing. Basalt fibers, right? All of these are materials that have a smaller energy footprint, so we can use more of them, even if we need to use more of them because they're less efficient. We can. And the same applies to locally produced versus brought in from Earth. Anyway, you've been listening to A Step Farther Out. I know it may not be obvious, on AnonRadio.net, a service of the SDF Public Access Unix system. A lot of the time it sounds like me ranting about things that bother me, rather than the more constructive conversations that I'd like to have, and I really do regret that and apologize for it. Now, you can listen to my other show, Hear Now the Words, Tuesdays and Fridays at 15 hours UTC here on AnonRadio.net. You can send me cards and letters. I look forward to them. I look forward to reading them on the air. I look forward to sending you something back in return. Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas 76101, United States of America. Coming up is Tobe.
7.